Chapter 6. My Return to the Still. As I sat there in the silence of my mind, satisfied that Steve would get me help, I felt relieved that I had successfully orchestrated my rescue. My paralyzed arm was partially recovered, and although it hurt, I felt hopeful that it would recover completely. Yet even in this discombobulated state, I felt a nagging obligation to contact my doctor. It was obvious that I would need emergency treatment that would probably be very expensive, and what a sad commentary that even in this disjointed mentality, I knew enough to be worried that my HMO might not cover my costs in the event that I went to the wrong health center for care. Still sitting at my desk with my good left arm, I reached for the 3-inch stack of business cards I had collected over the past few years. I had only visited my current doctor once, about 6 months earlier, but I remembered that there was something Irish about her name. Saint something. So I began searching for associations. In my mind's eye, I could recall perfectly the symbol of the Harvard crest located in the top central position of her business card. Pleased with my ability to remember exactly what the card looked like, I thought to myself, fine, this will be just fine. All I have to do is find the card and make the call. To my astonishment, however, as I looked at the top card, I realized that although I retained a clear image in my mind of what I was looking for, I could not discriminate any of the information on the card in front of me. My brain could no longer distinguish writing as writing, or symbols as symbols, or even background as background. Instead, the card looked like an abstract tapestry of pixels. The entire picture was a uniform blend of all its constituent pieces. The dots that formed the symbols of language blended in smoothly with the dots of the background. The distinctions of color and edge no longer registered to my brain. Dismayed, I realized that my ability to interact with the external world had deteriorated far more than I could ever have imagined. My grip on normal reality had been all but peeled away. I was no longer capable of perceiving the mental cues I had depended on to visually discriminate between objects. On top of my inability to identify my own physical boundaries, and in the absence of my internal clock, I perceived myself as fluid. Coupled with my loss of long-term and short-term memories, I no longer felt grounded or safe in the external world. What a daunting task it was to simply sit there in the center of my silent mind, holding that stack of cards and trying to remember, who am I? What am I doing? Searching for any connection with my external reality, I had lost all sense of urgency. Yet amazingly, my frontal lobe fought hard to hang on to the task, and I still embraced the occasional wave of clarity that routed me back into this earthly realm via my physical pain. During these moments of clarity, I could see, I could identify, I could remember what I was doing, and I could discriminate again between the varied incoming stimuli. So faithfully, I plodded forward. That's not the card. That's not the card. That's not the card. It took over 35 minutes for me to navigate my way a mere inch down into that stack, where I finally recognized the Harvard crest. By this point, however, the entire concept of a telephone was a very interesting and bizarre kind of thing. I felt oddly removed from my ability to have any comprehension about what it was I was supposed to do with it. Somehow I understood that this thing in my space was going to connect me through a wire to a completely different space. And at the other end of the wire, there would be a person to whom I could speak and she would understand me. Wow, imagine that. Because I was afraid that I would lose my focus and the doctor's card would get confused with the others, I cleared the desk space in front of me and placed her card directly in front. I picked up the phone and placed the number keypad on the desk right next to the business card. Because my brain had been on a steady rate of disintegration, the appearance of the number pad now looked completely strange and foreign. As I sat there drifting in and out of my insubordinate left mind, I remained calm. Periodically, I was able to match the number squiggle on the card to the number squiggle on the telephone keypad. To keep track of the numbers that I had already dialed, I covered the number on the business card with my left index finger as soon as I pushed the number on the phone using my stumpy right index finger. I had to do this because I could not remember from moment to moment which numbers I had already pressed. I repeated this strategy until all the numbers were dialed, and then I placed the phone to my ear, and I listened. Feeling drained and disoriented, I was afraid that I would forget what I was doing, so I continued to repeat in my mind, "This is Jill Taylor. I'm having a stroke. This is Jill Taylor. I'm having a stroke." But when the phone was answered and I tried to speak, I was blown away to discover that although I could hear myself speaking clearly within my mind, no sound came out of my throat, not even the grunts that I was able to produce earlier. I was flabbergasted. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. I can't talk. And it wasn't until this moment when I tried to speak out loud that I had any idea that I couldn't. My vocal cords were inoperative and nothing, no sound at all, would come forth.